Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
So here's your little news update from Carmen on this April Fool's Day. I had to look it up, so that probably tells you all you need to know about how closely I am following the NCAA men's basketball tournament. But we have arrived at the coveted Final Four. The University of Virginia will face off with Auburn. Texas Tech will face off with Michigan State. I think it is fair to say they are all dark horses, and so a dark horse is definitely going to win this race. The Auburn Tigers and the Texas Tech Red Raiders, they're going to make their very first appearances in the NCAA tournament final weekend in Minneapolis this coming Saturday. Neither one of them have ever, you know, they've never been to the big dance. And so since UConn did this 20 years ago, making its first appearance and then winning a national title, right? That's what the Auburn Tigers and now the Texas Tech Red Raiders are seeking to do. So those will be great storylines this week to follow. Joining them will be the Michigan State Spartans. By the way, Auburn is, I happen to know it's like very dark blue and orange. Texas Tech Red Raiders, I'm assuming are red and maybe like silver and gray. Michigan State Spartans, I feel fairly confident that is green. I feel like I have seen them before. And then the Virginia Cavaliers is also a dark blue and orange combination of colors. So there you go. Just trying to get you ready, because if you live in the Twin Cities, you're going to start seeing these people. Like, droves of people are going to be coming into the Twin Cities to root for their teams. And so hospitality is our opportunity here. We have an opportunity to be hospitable to the folks who are cheering for all of these Final Four competitors. Now, some of the people who arrive are going to be mad in March Madness in a way that is not just spirited, but also angry. And so I thought it'd be fun to talk with Dr. Linda Mental about March Madness in terms of the level of anger that people exhibit in sports, and then how we as Christians ought to be taking a different approach to that. So up next, Linda Mental on how to manage our March Madness, or maybe better said, our March anger. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Joining me now, Dr. Linda Mental. She is joining me via Skype. Linda, welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm not angry. I'm just a depressed person this morning because my beloved Duke Blue Devils, oh, it was such a heartbreaking loss yesterday. It was hard to watch. In fact, I thought maybe I'd wake up this morning and the news would say, oh, April Fools, they actually won the game. But watching
so
it,
the Duke Blue Devils, you know, I'll just admit that anybody who is not a Duke fan, they're actually the team we love to hate. Like, it doesn't even matter where we went to school. We love to hate them because they just win all the time.
I know. And so here's the thing. I said this to my family because we are like diehards. We have the flag flying. We go to Cameron and we see the games. No. And so when they lost yesterday, here's been my backup. I always said, look, I'm a Michigander. I grew up in Michigan. I said, when Duke loses, I will root for either of those Michigan teams. And I said this in the car yesterday coming home from the performance that I was in for the Easter Messiah. So we were in a very spiritual mood. and I said, oh, cause we got to all now rally around Michigan State. And everybody in the car goes, nope, not going to do it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So am I right that Michigan State is green?
Yeah, it's green and white, the Spartans.
There you go. Okay, so I love that you have just shifted your affection. So I'm kind of like that. It doesn't matter to me if my team loses. Anybody else from the SEC who's still in it is now my team. So
yeah,
my heart kind of migrates like from my own team to then the part of the country that I have an affection for and who we play against most of the time. So I am definitely rooting now for either Virginia or Auburn, and they're going to play each other. So one of those two is going to end up, you know, in the championship game. So I'm rooting against you no matter what, if you're rooting for Michigan State.
I should be rooting for Virginia because I live in Virginia. But you know what? Virginia and Duke are in the same conference. So my husband is rooting for Virginia. He said, you know, and you have to like that coach. And we're going to talk a little bit here about anger. And you got to say that the Virginian coach is a very calm guy. He is a believer, by the way. And he has managed that team with grace. And, you know, he just stays calm and steady throughout the game. It's been interesting, Carmen. I haven't seen every game, but the lack of technical fouls on the coaches has been noticed this year. You know, we don't have people being thrown out because they're over the top. A lot of times we have that. And we haven't had the fans get really awful during some of these games. I know in the past, I remember when Grayson Allen, he was accused of tripping people occasionally. And so whenever he'd come on the court, people would boo him and start screaming at him. And then there'd be this venom on social media. I did see a lot of really awful, angry comments towards the Liberty team when Liberty University actually beat Mississippi State. And I read through the Twitter feed and I was just appalled at the horrible and angry things that people said. So I think that's one of the things that happens is fans can just let loose and let their anger go. And one of the things that we know is the more you express your anger, the more you rev up your anger. So it's not a good thing.
So let's talk about this. At drlindamental.com, you have a piece posted, The Anger of March Madness. Let's start down the list because I really just appreciate that you unpack it for us. So talk with us about blame versus responsibility.
So my kids were in school, they actually went to one of the Chicago area public schools or not a private school in Wheaton. And I remember sitting on the stands during a basketball game with some of the kids and the parents were just screaming at their kids. And in a way that was whenever the kid would miss the ball or not get the ball, there would just be this screaming at the kid rather than, you know, trying to encourage the kid and trying to say, okay, you know, what did you do wrong? Maybe later after the game, what could you have done better? What do you think you need to work on? But this just kind of screaming at people on the sidelines or yelling at the coaches and the refs for, you know, making the wrong call, just again, is not a way to calm people down. It's just going to make aggression and anger worse. And then people get out of control sometimes and they actually hit people or do something you don't want to happen. So one of the shifts that we have to make when we're watching sports is, you know, focus less on blaming somebody on the court and, you know, maybe look at it as, hey, they're infallible. They make mistakes. They missed a shot. RJ Barrett missed a shot. You know, he's human. He missed the shot that lost the game. I'm sure he's dealing with a lot today on his own and trying to figure out, boy, I better get in there and work on my free throws rather than people yelling and blaming him for what he did. I think it's a better approach.
So moving from blame to responsibility, I like the way that you framed this. You can teach your child or maybe even your adult how to move from madness to self-control. Number one, when the call doesn't go your way, focus less on blame and more on responsibility. And then number two, understand the difference between anger and aggression or over-aggression.
Yes. So we know from the biblical statement that anger is not wrong. So, you know, the Bible says be angry, but don't sin. So anger is something we all feel. We do get angry. Sometimes we have a righteous anger. Sometimes that anger moves us forward to make a decision. But there's a difference when it morphs over to real aggression, where people move that anger. And this is what we see when we are dealing with sexual, you know, assault. We're dealing with any kind of physical violence, where it now is anger that has become aggressive and it's hurtful to people and it does damage. It also does damage to the physical body. So I want to make that point, Carmen, that when you get so angry and you get into like even hostility is the number one factor for men that predicts heart disease. So our emotions are very linked to our physical health as well. And when we allow this anger expression to get so intense that it moves to aggression, it's not only hurting our physical bodies, but it's also hurting our emotional lives and then potentially our relational lives and certainly our spiritual lives, because we're allowing it now to get into an area that is not healthy and not appropriate.
So if you struggle with anger on the field or on the sidelines, Dr. Linda Mental and I are going to continue marching down this list of great ideas for the way that you and I can move from anger to self-control, not only in basketball, but in baseball and every other sport as well, not only as players on the field, but parents on the sidelines. So I'm going to continue my conversation via Skype with Dr. Linda Mental in just a minute. So Dr. Linda, and again, friends, you can find what we're talking about today at drlindamental.com. We're talking about March Madness or March Anger and how we can move from anger to self-control. We've talked about shifting from blame to responsibility and being sure that we are appropriately angry and not aggressive. Now let's talk about the fact that this is everyone's responsibility. And Linda, let me share with you an experience that I had when I was a kid. I played softball. My dad was one of our coaches. And I remember him and going, and this goes back to the days where, like, you know, you'd like, if you wanted to make a specialty t-shirt, you had to actually like go buy letters and have your, in this case, my mom, his wife, like iron them onto a shirt. Like, right, yeah. Line them up. And so my dad made this iron-on shirt for this other dad, and he handed it to him in the middle of a game. He, like, had it, like, tucked into his – I mean, he knew the time was going to come, right? And he walked over to the guy, and he reached over the fence, and he addressed him by his first name, and he said, "You're benched. You're benched. You are not allowed to strike out just because your kid strikes out." And so my dad made this guy wear this shirt that said, "I'm benched. I struck out when my kid struck out." And it never happened again. Everybody laughed like it was a way of dealing with it. But we need some like parental accountability here. So talk about the fact that this is everyone's responsibility.
Yeah, we had a similar occurrence. My kids played soccer in the Chicago area, and we had a game one time. It got so bad in the Chicago area with the parents screaming at their kids, getting out of control, actually moving into the field, you know, so the refs had to keep pushing parents backwards, that kind of thing, that there was a period, and I don't know if it was just for the city of Wheaton, but I think it was larger than that, but we had to actually, we could not speak during the game. We had to go to these soccer games, and for, I don't know, it was a period of a week or two or something, they made the parents not talk. Nobody could do anything but do the little clap, you know, the little golf clap at the end whenever they would score a goal or they would do something well, and they controlled it. They made sure that parents didn't do that, and they had people being escorted out if they did that. I think it was the same kind of measure, because it speaks to the level of, you know, people, they're just not playing by the rules, and they're getting so overly involved. And I think a little bit living vicariously through their kids, you know, why are they so worked up that their child is maybe, you know, missed the ball, or when they got a goal, it becomes, you know, it's great to celebrate, but it's your child making the goal, not you. So I think one of the issues, and this was one of the points of the blog, was that there are guidelines for every sport. There are, you know, flagrant fouls in basketball that need to be called at times. There are technicalities on coaches. They need to stay in their lane and off the court when they're, you know, so worked up. And we saw a lot of people. I'm old enough to remember a few of the, you know, the Bobby, oh boy, I'm just blocking his name, the Indiana coach, who was very
Knight,
known for,
Bobby Knight.
Yeah, thank you. Bobby Knight, who, you know, just was so well known for his temper, but I don't know that I'd want to be well known for that kind of thing. So there are rules, there are guidelines. Parents should be looking at those with their kids and, you know, helping them when, you know, by modeling what they're doing.
Well, and that's the modeling good sportsmanship. And then I love the keep it all in perspective. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So it's only a game. I mean, it really is. I mean, it is really exciting. I know, right? I mean, people get so identified with their team and it becomes a part of them, which I understand. I mean, during Michigan football season, we are our whole relatives. I mean, we're texting. We're, you know, we have the maize and blue toilet seats in some of the bathrooms, and it's just crazy. People get so over-identified with their teams, but in the end, it's only a game, and there are very few players that go on to the professional leagues that are actually going to make it to that level. So even at the professional level, I mean, you have to understand this is not a fight for life or death. It's, you know, it's fun, it's entertainment, it's great. But if it becomes a part of your identity and you just can't lose well because of you're so wrapped up in the end game and you can't talk to somebody. One of the things that happened, Carmen, during one of the Michigan football games that we went to, we always have a family reunion, and one of our family in-laws was for another team. And after the game, he just wouldn't even speak to anybody. They lost, the other team lost. And, you know, we were leaving the big house and he wouldn't speak to us. He wouldn't talk to us. He didn't want to go out to dinner with us because he was so upset for the game. And I thought, wow, this is really sad. This is a little bit too much. You know, we need to be able to lose well and to be able to, you know, enjoy the game, but not make this something that is just like, it's not the same as world hunger or some other important cause in our life.
So in addition to losing well, we also need to win well. And so I think that if we happen to be in a very competitive family, or we happen to be representing a team that tends to lose to whoever it is that our extended family maybe, or our, you know, the neighborhood we live in, the community is always for, if we're always on the losing side of that and they're always rubbing it in, it makes it hard to be a good loser. And so being a good winner is important as well, right? And recognizing that there is a loss and a loser on the other side, or there's a loss, but maybe we don't need to call them losers. Like, the people on the losing side aren't losers.
Right. Well, and so, you know, a lot of our listening audience is the Chicago area. And I'm a diehard Cubs fan. So I have years and years, I think it's 108 to be exact, of not me personally, but of the Chicagoans losing in baseball. And that's why when we won this last time, this World Series, it was just so astounding because, you know, we just have years and years of having to learn how to graciously lose. And, you know, this is something you want to teach your kids. This is something. When my husband was coaching soccer, you know, and when I was in the dance world, and there's lots of dance competitions, so it goes even beyond the traditional sports that we think of, where if you're not the first place, you need to ask yourself, did I play well? Did I do my best? Was I good on my team? You know, those things we used to go over and over with our kids. Look at your performance, try to do the best at what you can. But also, when somebody wins and you lose, be gracious, shake their hand, go over, make eye contact, congratulate them on what they did. We saw a little bit of that in the March Madness lines when the basketball players go by each other and they have to shake hands. There were a few people who refused to look at the other person, would not shake their hand, looked angry and moved on. And, you know, it's a little bit, I was a little bit dismayed by that and thought, come on. You've played well. You've gotten to this point. You've done really well. Most of these games have been played really well. You know, congratulate the person who wins and the winner. Be humble. Be you know, gracious to the other team, because in any given day, you could be on that other side. And that's what we always used to say to our kids. Then you could be the loser. So when you win, be humble and be gracious to the other team.
So the list is rounded out with learn self-control at every age and show your skills, not your temper. You got time to talk about one of those.
Yeah. So I think this is all about one of the benefits of sports is that you really can teach your kids, and hopefully they learn this and go into their adult years, some self-control, because that's one of the things that team sports really works at. It works at leadership. There's a lot of great positive benefits to being on a team and learning sports. But one of the things you always have to practice is you have to keep your temper in control. You have to focus on the moment of the game and what's going on. When you have a terrible shot and you miss something, you have to refocus your mind and move forward. And that's a sense of resiliency that can be taught in team sports. If you just get totally wiped out by the fact that you just missed the shot or you lost the game, you're never going to move forward, and you're going to lose your perspective. So helping people understand that, just get back into that control. Don't let your emotions overwhelm you. Get your head back in the game and keep moving forward. It's a great skill for life. And it's one of the things we have to teach our kids for resiliency, because they're going to lose. They're going to fail. They're going to have moments that they're not at their best. And if they can maintain their self-control, which is a fruit of the spirit, which is a good thing, it's born out of love, then that's a great skill to teach kids and to go into adulthood as well.
So I love that you reference the fruit of the spirit, absolutely, self-control. I love that you reference getting your head back in the game, because we always want to be encouraging people to cultivate the mind of Christ on the matters of the day. So Dr. Linda Mental, thank you again for helping us today manage our March Madness or our March Anger. You guys can check it all out at drlindamental.com. We'll be right back. So, I don't know about you, but the whole, like, Brexit situation has me pretty confused. So, it looks to me as if Theresa May is preparing to bring back her own unpopular withdrawal agreement one last time. However, lawmakers are apparently voting on a series of Brexit alternatives for a second time, hoping to force the government's hand around, like, a what I'll call a rival plan. There's speculation that the prime minister could call a snap election if her plan fails. And then what we're dealing with in terms of the sort of the drop dead date right now, Britain is still set to crash out of the European Union on April the 12th, unless a credible way forward can be agreed upon. So we are going to talk with our friend David Aikman. He not only has his finger on the pulse of this, he's got his finger on the pulse of several other things. And we're going to talk about not only Brexit, but President Trump's threat to close the southern U.S. border with Mexico and the cutting off of U.S. federal aid to Honduras, Guatemala and El Salvador. All that up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So next week, April 9th to 12th, we are going to be engaged in what we call Spring Share. And the way that Spring Share works is that we celebrate on air the stories that folks have shared with us about how Faith Radio has positively impacted their life. So how have we helped you walk your faith out into the world? Maybe it's Mornings with Carmen. Maybe it's another program that you hear during the day. Maybe it's a particular episode of a show that really, wow, changed the way you thought about something or motivated you to do something positive, equipped you to walk your faith out into the world that God so loves in ways that honor Jesus. We would love to hear your stories in order that we can share your stories during Spring Share. So you can share your stories by emailing me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. or by calling 877-933-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH.
Thousands of years ago, men constructed cities and pyramids with little more than primitive tools made out of rocks and bones. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Without a doubt, those ancient tools served a good purpose and got the job done. But now we've got better tools to use for do-it-yourself projects. And the same thing goes for parenting. The old techniques that our own parents used with us are rarely as effective in today's world. Relying on those antiquated methods would be like constructing a skyscraper with a stone chisel. Is your tool belt a little outdated? Well, here's my hope for you. As your kids move through their teen years, keep your tactics up to date and continue finding new ways to relate.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
David, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Carmen. Very nice to be here.
Oh, so Dr. Aikman, let us just admit that we need you to help us understand the point at which we have arrived in terms of Brexit and what you expect to happen today and in the coming days.
My gosh. Most Brits want to understand what's going on because people are just bewildered by all this plethora of parliamentary votes, threats to do this and not to do that. It's a very confused situation. Probably the most confused person right now is Theresa May, the Prime Minister, because she's faced with all kinds of possibilities of votes in Parliament that would make her position very difficult to hold on to.
Well, and we heard at the end of last week that she was offering to resign. She just wants something to be concluded. Is that your sense of the
right.
point? Okay. Tell us what that looks like.
Well, she's willing to resign if Parliament will actually agree to the deal that she signed off on with the European Union. But they've refused three times to do this. And it's very unlikely that she will get a fourth vote. So what the Parliament is doing today, Monday, is it's going to have what it calls indicative votes on alternative means of leaving the EU. One of them is to leave with no deal, but that's already been rejected. One of them is to have a second referendum, or what they call the people's vote. Another is to be part of a customs union with the EU. Another is to be in the same relationship to the EU that Britain was several years ago when it was a member of the common market. So it's very confusing. And the trouble is there doesn't seem to be a majority of members of Parliament who are in favor of any particular thing. There is a majority opposed to various options that have been offered, but not a majority that seems to say, this is the way to go, let's do this.
Okay, so I think that for those of us in the U.S., we need a little bit of a reminder of so Theresa May has this slim majority in the parliament, not because everybody is in her party, but because she has the support of members of parties that are technically not her party. But that's always at risk, and it's razor thin. When we see people resigning their positions, I'll just admit to you, David, we have a really hard time imagining that happening in the United States. We have a really hard time imagining members of Congress resigning over a vote. So help us kind of understand how this works.
Well, the difference is that you cannot be a minister or have a government position unless you are a member of parliament. And that has to be a member of parliament of the governing party, which in this case is the Conservatives. And so it's quite possible for ministers to resign, and several of them have, because of their disagreement with Prime Minister May, who wants to push her deal across the border. But it would be very unlikely that this situation could occur in the United States because of the congressional and Senate system of cabinet approvals, which is different in the UK.
Okay, and we've just learned that the UK Parliament will not be taking Easter recess. Tell us what. When we think of Easter recess, like we wouldn't be thinking of it as an extended period of time. Is Easter recess traditionally kind of long in terms of Parliament?
Well, no, it's a few weeks. I forget exactly how many weeks or how many days, but it is an extended period of time. And the fact that they are not doing this indicates a real crisis of parliamentary procedure. Basically, the UK faces a deadline of April the 12th. If there is no agreement, or even if there is an agreement, the UK is now set to leave the EU on that date, April the 12th. Now, it's possible they could get permission to extend the date of departure for longer, but the EU would only agree to that if the UK Parliament agrees to the deal that it worked out with Theresa May back in December last year. So it's a real logjam. Parliament absolutely refuses to agree to her deal, and they haven't come up with any other proposal yet that will have a majority of members in agreement about. So the debates today and the votes later on today will not have the force of law, but they will have the force of deciding which are the most likely proposals that Parliament would actually adopt if they were proposed as actual legal actions.
Okay, David, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the threat of the U.S. president to close the U.S. southern border with Mexico and the cutting off of federal aid to Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. David Aikman and I are going to have that conversation up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So, Dr. Aikman, we here in the United States are learning more about our president's declaration to suspend federal aid to Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. We think we are talking about $1.3 billion from the fiscal year 2017 and 2018 budgets, monies that were allocated for this so-called Northern Triangle of Central American nations. What's your perspective on this?
Well, it seems clear that the influx of migrants from south of the border has come in recent months not from Mexico, as was traditionally the case, but from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. And the president is holding the governments of those countries responsible for actually encouraging, as he alleges, encourages migrants to take caravans and to go north and to cross the border into the United States. President Trump's position is that the whole infrastructure of U.S. federal agencies protecting the borders is completely swamped by this influx, and something has to be done to stop these people from approaching the border and trying to get across it.
So for those of you who, you know, don't necessarily follow what the president tweets about such things, he is putting the responsibility, maybe not surprisingly this morning, into the lap of Congress, encouraging congressional Democrats to work with congressional Republicans to fix what he describes as loopholes in terms of asylum. I think that, David, one of the things that we just recognize is we need comprehensive immigration reform, and nobody seems to really be working on it in any meaningful way. And so we've got tens of thousands of people migrating in the direction of the southern border. We got 100,000 people crossing the border in a given month. I don't know how countries could keep their people from leaving. And yet, you know, certainly countries that are south of Mexico can potentially keep people from south of them migrating north. Is that the idea, that if the flow would be stymied further south, that we would not be dealing with at least the numbers we're dealing with at the U.S. border?
Well, that is the case. And in fact, the president has spoken favorably of efforts by the Mexican authorities to prevent these migrant caravans from Central America from proceeding further north than Mexico to cross the United States border. But now it seems that that is not enough to either slow down or bring an end to the influx of migrants. And he's adopted this very strong policy to try and discourage the governments of those Central American countries from allowing these caravans to proceed.
So if you're listening to us right now and you've got, you know, folks who you support in ministry in Honduras, Guatemala, or El Salvador, we'd love for you to gather information from them about the impact this is having on the ground. Are people in those countries even aware that this is taking place? And if so, how is it affecting and impacting, you know, efforts there in those Central American countries? David, I'd love to take the last few minutes that we have to talk about Venezuela. Can you give us an update on Venezuela?
Well, you know, that's like giving you an update on Brexit. I mean, the situation changes almost every 24 hours. And the latest information is that the number of Venezuelans trying to get into Colombia has increased drastically. Now, we already know that about 1 million Venezuelans from their whole population, which is about 10% of them, have crossed the border into neighboring Colombia. And that number is increasing drastically quickly, unfortunately, because the situation in the country of Venezuela is so chaotic. No electricity, no food, no infrastructure of the government. And it's really, the whole system seems to be collapsing around the people who live there, which is tragic for anybody you know who lives in Venezuela.
Well, and we're seeing efforts for, you know, an increased number of Venezuelans to come here to the United States. When we think about the humanitarian crisis that already exists on the southern border, and we talk about what's happening in Central America and why people want to leave there, not only to escape poverty, but to escape gangs that really control the major cities, at least San Pedro Sula and Tegucigalpa in Honduras.
Right.
You know, when we talk about adding the potential efforts of Venezuelans to immigrate into Colombia and, you know, theoretically through Colombia to other places, let's just talk about the movement of people globally. Have you ever seen anything in all of your years of covering the news? Have you ever seen such a global migration of people?
No, absolutely not. And I think the Venezuelan Central American migrant crisis has absolutely eclipsed the crisis that we saw in Syria with all those migrants trying to get into the European Union. I think this is a massive groundswell of popular movement in a part of the world that we haven't seen that much of it previously. And it shows that people look to the U.S. basically as their last best hope for a better life. They desperately want to go somewhere where there is law and order, decent food, clean water, and other basic priorities of life, because they don't see that in their own country.
So, friends, let's be praying today across all of these fronts. David Aikman, thank you for giving us your perspective again today. We genuinely appreciate it. You guys can find David at Godspeed Magazine. We got to take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back. So, circling back around to where we began on this April Fool's Day, let me encourage you as a Christian to embrace who you are as a fool for Christ. I mean, when it comes to the cross, let us be counted fools by the world. And so let me invite you to consider today what you're thinking about and how you're thinking about what you're thinking about, and bringing the mind of Christ to bear on those issues. And seeing people and the world around you and the challenges that we face through the lens of the gospel. Now, I acknowledge that's going to be considered foolishness by the standards of the world. But our worldview is not the view of the world. It's the view from the cross. And so today, as you enter into situations that, frankly, right now are beyond our ability to predict, I want you to allow the Holy Spirit to impress upon your mind the foolishness of the cross, and see those events and those opportunities, those circumstances, those challenges through the lens of the cross, through the lens of Calvary. At the end of the day, will you have given yourself away in much the same way that Christ gave himself away? Like, that's going to be foolishness to the world, but it's the very wisdom of God. Today, will you consider others better than yourself? That is, you know, not worldly wise, but it is the wisdom of God. Will you do your work today as if unto the Lord? Will you walk the extra mile simply as a demonstration of love? Will you think about your crosswalk every time you arrive at a crosswalk? Will you consider the glory of the Lord and the possibility of the sunrise, S-O-N, when you see the sunrise or when you see the sunset at the end of this day? And when the world cries, "You fool!" will you knowingly acknowledge that you stand as a fool for the cross? The foolishness of God is actually wisdom. And so let us not forget that on this April Fool's Day. Bring the mind of Christ to bear on all of the matters of this day. Let me know what you're thinking about and how you're thinking about it. You can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.